I'm Jennifer Chiprich, and I'm going to be doing a talk today on the evaluation of an intervention to improve immunization up-to-date rates among children attending WIC in South Los Angeles. Along with me, there is also Ms. Julia Heiserling out there in the audience. Between the two of us, we ought to be able to answer any questions anybody might ask at the end. Just a little bit of background. South LA Health Projects is the Community Health Services branch of LA Biomed and is a nonprofit organization. It has been conducting immunization activities at their WIC sites since the early 1990s. And WIC, Julia asked me to go ahead and clarify, WIC is a federally funded nutrition program for women, infants, and children. Now, some of the immunization activities that we've been doing at our WIC sites included AIR, which is assessment, information, and referral. And that includes assessing a child's immunization needs, providing the parents with immunization information, and referring children to their doctor to get needed immunizations. And if they don't have a medical home, we provided a referral list to them. An MVP is monthly voucher pickup. Is a strategy of issuing only 1 month of WIC vouchers instead of the customary 2 to 3 months worth at a time to participants whose children are past due for immunization. And the participants return to WIC monthly until their children are up to date. And the time period for this intervention activity was between April 2006 and December 2007. The additional intervention that we did on top of the AIR and MVP was using follow-up phone calls and letters that were initiated by the South Los Angeles Health Projects. We used ITS-LA, which is the Immunization Tracking System of Los Angeles, in order to track this. And that was specifically customized by South LA Health Projects to track immunization at the WIC sites. Now, the study population and how we separated them into the groups. The study population consisted of children served at one of the 10 South LA WIC sites between April and December 2006 and were 3 or 5 months of age and were under-immunized when screened. They were then broken into either an intervention group or a control group. Children who were under-immunized and served at a WIC site on an even day of the month were added to the intervention group, and that was approximately 600 children. The control group were children who were under-immunized and served at a WIC site on an odd day of the month, and that was about 508. I'll give you a second just to look at this. This is a snapshot of the population that we serve at our WIC sites in South Los Angeles. As mentioned before, the control group received the MVP and AIR at the WIC sites. The intervention group also received the same MVP and AIR at the WIC sites, plus a phone call and letter later from the South LA Health Projects. This is our first slide of results. As you can see from the percentages there, comparing the received intervention group to the did not received intervention group, there really is no significant difference in the proportion between the two groups at 13 months. Approximately 75.7% of the intervention group actually were contacted in some form. A successful contact was defined as a message left with an adult, a talk with a parent, and/or the receipt of a letter. We did a chi-square analysis and using a p-value for statistical significance of 0.05, we found that there was no significant difference between the two groups at either the seventh month or the 13th month. Now, we also examined them by current status in an effort to decrease loss to follow-up, and the p-values remained non-significant. Currently active was defined as those who had attended one of the South Los Angeles Health Project WIC offices in their 10th, 11th, or 12th month and had brought their immunization cards. And we chose to do the analysis using the received intervention group versus the not received intervention group instead of the original control versus intervention to show a real-life presentation for the study about how the actual outcomes in the community. We also opted to do a comparison between the received and did not receive intervention group for change in up-to-date status between the 7th and 13th month. In the received intervention group, 24.4% actually changed their up-to-date status between their 7th and 13th month. In the did not receive intervention group, 21.5% changed. And the chi-square, again, was not significant. As I pointed out when I started evaluating this, because we're not seeing a significant difference, it means you're not seeing a decrease either. So just in case we wanted to continue doing this intervention, we did a cost-effectiveness analysis, which was looking at the different contact modes. That of receiving a letter only compared to receiving both a letter and phone contact, and then receiving the phone contact only compared to receiving both a letter and phone contact. As you can see, we did not find any significant differences. And there were 450 in the study that received contact, 210 that received phone contact, and 240 that received a letter but no phone contact. And we said that a positive letter contact was, we didn't get it back in the mail. It was the best we could do. So we're making it short and sweet. The discussion was, there is no statistically significant difference based on the chi-square analysis between the received intervention group and control group at 13 months. Interpretation, that means there is no significant increase in up-to-date rates at the 13th month with the use of follow-up calls and letters, AIR and MVP, over the up-to-date rates with the use of AIR or MVP alone. We did attempt randomization of subjects. It was a convenient sampling of sorts for when somebody would show up. Those parents that were coming into the WIC offices did not know if they were part of the intervention or the control group because they all received the same AIR and MVP intervention at the WIC offices. And the only people that truly knew who was in the intervention group and control group were the employees at the South Los Angeles Health Projects, and they didn't have any direct contact except with the intervention group. Some other factors that might have influenced this is media coverage of immunizations, and we can hope that that was the same between the two populations. And then other variables not measured by the South Los Angeles Health Projects team. And external validity, we can extrapolate this to our own WIC clientele, but it is quite possible that you can enact this in another population and find quite different results. So we feel we can extrapolate it to our WIC clientele. There's been other literature published. There were findings by Hoekstra in the Journal of Pediatrics in 1999 that found that there was no increase with the use of recall over top of the MVP and AIR. Also, we found that DTP was the most missed vaccine by children, and that matches other literature. And we also had high baseline rates and effectiveness with the use of MVP. We were seeing upwards of 80%. Based on the findings of this study, we discontinued the supplemental telephone and mail follow-up, but we continue to administer AIR and MVP at all 10 South Los Angeles WIC sites. And to learn more, you can contact me or you can contact Julia, who has since moved on to another job, but she's willing to help out. And we can put you on the road to get the answers if we can't give them to you. Thank you.
This time we'll take questions from the audience. No questions? Oh, there's a microphone.
I was just curious, can you explain again what AIR is? Be a little more specific about what it is. I got the MVP, but not the AIR part.
Do you want to take that? They brought me in for evaluation. She's been running the program the entire time.
Julia, do you want to go to the microphone, please? Thank you.
Okay, the AIR essentially was assessment information and referral. So when a parent of a WIC client brought their child in for WIC services, nutrition education, or receiving food vouchers, the WIC staff would screen the immunization record. So the parent would be asked to bring the yellow card or California Child Immunization Record in. The WIC staff would enter the shots given into the ITS-LA tracking system, identify specific shots that were missing based on the age of the child, provide education to the parent about the shots that were missing, and then refer them to free and low-cost immunization providers if needed. And then if the child was missing shots, they would then be asked to come back a month later after going back in to speak to the provider, show the record again, and that was sort of an incentive to get your kids up to date. You'd only have to come every 2 to 3 months for the monthly voucher pickup if your children were up to date. But essentially, assessment, information, referral, assess the record, provide some information about immunizations and specifically what shots are missing based on the schedule, refer them to a free or low-cost immunization provider. Does that help you out?
Thanks. Pam, did you have a question?
My question is, you talked about referring to no-cost or low-cost providers. Why did you ever consider just providing immunizations on site at the WIC clinics to improve the results?
You go ahead.
We had looked at sometimes doing, we have actually had times when we had community clinics come in and give free shots at the WIC sites, but administratively it's very difficult with the amount of space that's available at the WIC sites, and we also wanted to really encourage a medical home. We wanted people to be going in to see a physician or a clinic or other staff to assess their other needs, so we didn't want to separate the immunizations from a more comprehensive preventive visit for the kids. On occasion, we did offer shots at the WIC sites for things like National Infant Immunization Week. We'd occasionally have people come in, and then a couple times a year, we gave free shots at health fairs. But on the whole, we really wanted to get people going back in and seeing their provider and having an ongoing source of care that cut across all conditions.
My question is for Jennifer Tinney. I just want to make sure I have this clear. Did you do the trainings in the physician's offices, or would you have them come to regional locations?
No, we choose locations around the state and then have them come in. It's in an area close by. If we go to Flagstaff, for instance, we'll invite in everyone to a local hotel where we do it there. We choose the sites, which is how we ended up in the Moonshine Saloon one time. We've done them pretty much everywhere. We have done them at provider sites as long as they're willing to have other groups come in. So if there's a large community health center, for instance, a lot of times they'll host it, but we do invite everyone to come into that site too. So it's not just for their staff, and this increases the ability for the private sector to talk to community health centers and the county health departments there usually also.
Okay, I'm sorry, I had a two-part question. So on average, would you say that their traveling distance was within an hour, or was it sometimes longer than that?
You know, it depends. We tried to, because we have limited resources, we do between 10 and 18 a year. Mm-hmm. And so we try to get those in the major metropolitan areas or, you know, in some cases, like one town that's in between maybe six. Mm-hmm. But what we have found over time is we send out the schedule ahead of time. It's a summer schedule. This is where we're going to be in the next 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we have offices that send people to every one of them across the state because they can only have one person at a time. Mm-hmm. So we've had people drive 6 and 7 hours to go to a training. Usually we try to keep them regional.
Right. And was there a particular day of the week that was more, you got a better turnout than others?
Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. Never Monday or Friday, ever. And we also limit it to the summer months. So we don't interfere with flu and pneumonia season and RSV. We usually start in May, we end in September, and we take a huge break at back to school because they can't come out of the offices then. We can't leave the office then, certainly.
I have just a couple questions. Jonathan, I didn't catch who funded the study and who funded the vaccines.
The majority of the donations were provided by the Zesen Foundation and the Ping and Amy Chow Family Foundation.
Okay.
The vaccinations were purchased with these donations. The syringes, needles, were actually donated by a company called Biotop, which was based in Taiwan but moved to Shanghai.
Okay. Thank you. And then Jennifer, how did you get all those private providers on your registry?
Like I said, we're very, very fortunate with our registry. We have a mandate for reporting under the age of 18. Because we are a coalition, our steering committee is made up of medical leadership, which is the Academy of Pediatrics and our Arizona Medical Association, the osteopaths, the pharmacy association. We take those decisions to them and vote on that as a from a medical leadership standpoint. So it was our physicians who voted to make it a mandate for reporting, because they said, we want to make sure if we're reporting our data, the office across the street is also, so we can recall that back in. We've had that mandate in place since 1998, so we've now had 10 years of pretty good data coming in. We also work with the managed care groups to get that in. Thanks. We are so fortunate.
Are they inputting their own data, or are they just submitting their data and someone's putting it in for them?
They input their own in most cases. We do have a few provider offices that fax in a sheet if they just don't have the technology available, but we're web-based.
Right.
So they have to report their own. A few still report through a billing system. It's not really great data, so they found that they can't use it as effectively. Because it's web-based and we really, really emphasize using it for their record keeping, and so they look up the records, so they make sure that it's in there. We're still working on data quality, but we're looking like we're pretty good at this point.
Okay, and I just have one more question. We think immunization registries are it. I'm from Indiana, yeah. And we think we've got the best, but apparently you have an awesome one also. But our biggest lag is with private providers jumping, you know, getting in there on that registry.
Mm-hmm.
So of course all the health departments are on it, but the private providers are not. Do you know if any of the states mandate that VFC providers must be on a registry?
Do they? Some states do? You know what we... That would help. And we have not moved to do that because we wanted to make sure that we had vaccines in our offices, and if a office refused to, we just let them refuse. But we work with the managed care groups that pay them, and we get them to kind of push it. And so they'll start calling saying, we're doing our HEDIS assessment and your children aren't in ACEs, so guess what? We're going to spend the next month in your office pulling all of your records, or you can report them to ACEs. And so, and if the bills are, you know, they're getting their bills paid by them, typically they listen to them a little bit better than they do us.
Okay, this is regarding the WIC clinic study. And do you have any data prior to initiating that 1 month coupon thing for your clients?
Do we have it?
The question was about the data before. We did have data. We'd been doing the assessment, information, and referral since the mid-90s. And so we had something like almost a 20 percentage point increase in up-to-date rates from when we started the intervention in the WIC sites until now. And so, again, this study was looking at the additive impact of doing those additional calls and the additional letters out. But we did see impact, a big impact, from just doing the assessment, information, and referral and monthly voucher pickup. We never did a study to look to see what had more of an impact. Was it the MVP, or was it just doing the assessment and the information? And I did neglect to mention earlier that we also did group education classes at the WIC sites for parents as well. They were required to participate in at least one class a year on immunization, so.
Hi, this question is for Jonathan. Do you know about the history of Jinghai and why do they have such high hepatitis B prevalence besides perinatal transmission?
We figured that the rates, the prevalence of HBV in Jinghai is so high because of their rural region, a lot of health and sanitary issues, for example, going to the dentist even, getting your ear pierced, a lot of these things the tools they use sometimes are not the cleanest of tools. Going to the hospitals, even in the past, when they used syringes that weren't disposable, a lot of these syringes were not properly sanitized, and therefore a lot of the areas in rural China have this problem.
Short. Just for curiosity, what about the military have their own system, and there's a lot of them that moves around and the kids go to school in the communities. How do you deal with their, they are not part of the registry, so how do you keep up? Because half of the time they'll tell you the records are missing, you give them PH 731, they lose it, and so how do you keep up with that?
We invite our military sites to come in and be part of our training and part of our registry. And so as far as I can tell at this point, we have not had a problem with that in our areas. They still report to the registry. Because if you have to, if you have a child under the age of 18, if you give them a shot, it's a mandate. It doesn't matter if you're on a base or not. Now, the kids who come in from out of state, obviously if they didn't have a registry there, then we rely on parent records or trying to track that down. But then we make sure that as part of our training that our providers are recording historical data. So if a parent came in with a record from another state, they put that in ACES at the time that they also report the next shot that they gave. It is, and it's hard. And if they don't have a record with them, you know, what do you do? And our standpoint is you start the series all over again because you don't know what they've gotten. And if they can't get a hold of the records, you know, most of our providers will do anything they can to track it down by calling the old pediatrician or calling the old site, a school, anything to get it. If you can't, start it all over. We don't want them to leave. You know, we don't want them to leave that room and not know when they're going to come back. We have a lot of kids who are very far behind in Arizona. That's one of our main things. And so if they come in and they're behind and they don't have a record, we start them all over.
My question isn't for one person in particular, but I would imagine states that don't mandate participation from private providers probably all have the same problem getting enough data input. Is there anyone that you know of or any states that are that work with billing? You know, most doctors' offices pay people to get their billing done. So can we interface that some way with our registries? When they're billed, then we can work with the registry.
Our registry has the option of reporting through your billing system. And then the private provider then just has to download that information once a month into a spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet. And it's the software company who creates the billing system will do this for you, especially if you have a mandate in your state to report or reporting is important and that's what they're pushing. Those software companies will build that into it so you can get the information through a billing system. We're trying to move away from that because the data isn't, it's not as great as if they're putting it in. You know, we lose some of the historical pieces, we lose the parent contact for recall sometimes, but you can do it. And that was primarily how we started. We said, let's just start, we'll do it by a billing system. As we train your staff over the years, then start to move over to self-reporting. But that's how we started.
Okay, that's what I was curious about. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for all. Oh.
The teachers were an important aspect in the project, but the parents were informed about the shots and the kids were asked to bring home permission slips. With hepatitis B knowledge on the permission slips themselves, and the parents were invited or asked to come to the schools to receive more information from the teachers. In their communities, the teachers, like you said, hold a big part of the kind of the knowledge of the society. And so if the parents heard about how good of HPV vaccination was for their children, how it will protect them for life. They are more prone to let their children get vaccinated, and this was a very big part in why we got such good completion rates.
I think these were really three great programs. I think let's thank everybody again.